Okay, we're going to call the order the San Luis Obispo County Flood Control and Water Conservation District Zone 3 Advisory Committee meeting.
Yep, I will do a roll call vote. Member Seacrest?
Here.
Member Rushing? Member Guthrie?
Here.
Member Gibson?
Here.
Member Hageman? Member Bard? Or sorry, Makeda, sorry.
Here.
And Member Riley.
All right, so we now come to this number two on the agenda, which is a public comment. Anyone in the audience here for public comment? Seeing none, we'll move on to three, which is the meeting minutes.
Mr. Dana, I wanted to add something real quick during public comment. So you have a new finance person for our Zone 3 agencies. So that is Christina Borges back there on the left, and then her supervisor, Harold. So they will be coming to our meetings as she gets up to speed on this, on your guys' system. So I just wanted to introduce
her. Luckily for you, these meetings are usually relatively short. So, all right, the meeting minutes. Are you just looking for approval of the minutes?
Yes. Yes.
Anybody have any comments on the meeting minutes?
A second.
Yep. And then I think it's just the majority.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Moving forward to the approval of the 2025 meeting schedule.
I think I got this right this year. I had a few errors in it last time, so still same times and places as this current year. So
as far as the committee goes, is this 10:30 time? I'm the alternate, so I don't usually attend these meetings, but for everyone else, is this 10:30 time the optimum?
It is for me.
Yes.
Okay. And for you too, Dave?
Yes.
Okay. Do you need a vote on that, or are we just looking for...
I think you do need to approve it, so just the eyes have it.
Do you want a motion?
It's
a motion to approve the 2025 schedule.
Second.
Question, first and second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Approved. Now, David, we move on to you with the operation report.
Yep. All right. So let's see. We start out with the water plant operations, which I got from staff this morning. All right. So as of today, our Lobos water treatment plant is at 4.5 MGD. State is currently off. CCWA is still in maintenance and should be complete this week. We do not plan to turn state water back on at that point. We have no request at this time for state water. Lopez to Creek is at 3.0 MGD. The lake elevation is at 518.11 feet. The lake capacity is currently at 92%, and our volume is 45,458 acre feet.
Okay, any questions? I have one question about, since we're at, a separate, who was the gentleman from Grover, engineer who wrote that long?
That was David Swift, and we have a response to his presentation.
Okay.
As part of this packet.
Okay.
I was hoping to receive and file it on your guys' behalf, unless you have any comments that you would like or anything you'd want corrected in it.
So yeah, I'll wait till then.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Have anything else?
Yeah, I'll go down the whole section here. So that's part A. Part B is our projected reservoir levels. Everything seems to be tracking pretty normally, depending on what kind of rainfall we see this season, which it looks like it's looking to pack a punch again, maybe, with what I'm hearing in Northern California. So I'm anticipating that we likely will see it spill again this year if we see any rainfall that's similar to what we got this last year. If you do, at this chart here, if you do look at what we're predicting for the rainfall at those blue, just after the red inches on the middle there, we will not spill, and we should only get a little bit of a blip in the reservoir, and that's due to not saturating the soil enough. However, if we do get some strong storms in the beginning that get the get the ground nice and wet, we'll we will likely see some increases in the reservoir volume. So.
Those creeks, do you know if those creeks that are behind the lake, do they flow all year long?
So I was actually back there doing some investigation for some stream gauges, because there's a grant currently, and the eastern arm, like Huff's Hole and those kind of creeks and tributaries, we do see flow back there. It's interesting, it does go underground at some point, and then we see it pop up, and so right where we kind of enter into the reservoir, it's dry right there, but upstream from that we are seeing water flow, so I think it's probably still getting into the reservoir. I don't know about the Wittenberg arm on the western side. I would imagine that it's still flowing, because that's actually a larger tributary, so I think we're still getting inflow from that. And based on our calculations, our inflow is a calc, it's still showing inflow. So.
Is Vasquez Canyon and the Wittenberg section?
I think, I'm not familiar with that one, but I know more about the eastern side for whatever reason, and I haven't heard that name yet, so I'm thinking it's probably just on the Wittenberg arm. Got it. I will move us on to the monthly operations reports. So this is the latest one, October. Everyone's water usage is tracking pretty normal, since we're about a quarter of the way through the year. Everyone's sitting, right around, 8, 17, 15%-ish. So we're tracking really well for water usage right now. Still, I think our conservation as a way of life is kind of carrying through, and everyone's doing a really good job still conserving. So yeah, I don't see any issues with your guys' water usage at the moment. So, and that wraps up the operations reports.
Okay. I got a question the other day from someone. I couldn't answer it, but and I should know this, since I live in the city limits of Arroyo Grande. They asked me if Arroyo Grande was still, I wish Shane was here, still had penalties for high water usage. Do you know? Would you know?
Well, if they relieve the drought conditions in the city, we relieve drought condition, and therefore the penalties, unless
they went away.
Yeah, a drought penalties, but then there's normal water, you go up a tier of abysmal if you use more than you're, so you're charged more.
That's still correct for Arroyo Grande. So the drought restrictions went away because the emergency and the drought went away, technically. But I do think there's still some upper level penalties.
Yeah. Tiered pricing.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I'll tell them that if they ask again. All right, David, you're on again, I think, on
the
information items.
Yeah, mostly me here. So I'll write down your guys' budget. If you have any questions, please let me know. Overall, your budget, we're 25% of the way through the year. You're sitting at 19% of your budget spent so far. That's looking really good. The routine O&M is sitting at 27%, and the non-routine is sitting at less than 1%, and I'll get to why it's so low. And our capital outlay is sitting at less than 1% currently. Here's our kind of our routine O&M and maintenance costs. This is tracking, pretty well. This is chemical costs, water treatment, staffing, that sort of thing. So we're tracking right in line with what we think our actual budget is. It's a little high right now. We've been doing a lot of work up at the dams and some other kind of routine maintenance. So I kind of suspect that this number will kind of creep back below the line as the year progresses. First part of the year, we're always trying to do a bunch of stuff before the rains hit, so this is pretty normal. The non-routine O&M, sorry, I'm having a hard time even seeing my screen here. There's something up there, but the reason our non-routine O&M costs are really low right now is we've got a lot of projects that have we spent a lot of money last fiscal year, and we saw that this graph really caught up towards the end of the year. And now we're kind of at a point where we're in a waiting game. We're waiting for either DSOD comments or studies to come back and things like that. So we're not seeing a lot of invoicing coming in on our non-routine as well as our capital outlay at the moment. So even though these projects are still ongoing or might be towards the finish line, we do anticipate that we'll see a few more invoices coming in, but they're just, you know, we're waiting on comments from DSOD and other regulators. So. And if you have any questions specifically on any one of these projects, just let me know. And then on the capital outlay, same thing. You know, some of these we're trying to pump up budget as well, membrane racks. You know, so we'll have to build a pot of money before we can spend it. The domestic or the fire flow tank, same thing. We're trying to build up, you know, $800,000 or $1 million to replace the fire flow tank. So another reason why we have design plans all in place to, you know, replace, like, say, the fire flow tank, but we're just not ready to pull the trigger on it yet. So a few of the capital outlay items, you'll see that we'll be asking for a lot of money from you, and it doesn't get spent, but it will get spent in, say, 2 years or 3 years once we have all the money to actually do the project. So that's pretty much it on the first quarter budget. Is there any particular projects on here that you guys wanted to ask about, any line items that you wanted to discuss?
I had a question about this spillway physical investigation.
Yes.
Is that an annual item that you...
That
is... shows non-routine.
Yeah, so that is not. So that was a regulation from DSOD after the Orville incident. So this has been ongoing. So they required us to do non-destructive and destructive testing of the spillway, as well as a desktop assessment of its strength and does it meet current codes. And so we started off with that original assessment that showed that we had some deficiencies, and then that the non-destructive and destructive testing will kind of point us where we need to do any repairs if needed. So we did do ground penetrating radar up there. We've looked to see if there's voids under the slabs. What we noticed was it was very minimal, and so we did go out and do cores and bore scopes in these locations. At this point in time, we don't see anything alarming. And then I believe the next thing that we're waiting on is they did do some soil analysis for the backs of the chute walls, which was one of the bigger concerning items. They thought we might have expansive material behind the chute walls that might be causing some offsets in the chute walls. I have subsequently found photos from construction that showed that that may have been in place from the get-go, but we'll kind of wrap it into one bigger package once we have the soils reports and can say it's either expansive or non-expansive. So in that report, we will also see whether or not our consultant recommends any, like, mitigation efforts after we get all this data back. So it is an ongoing thing. So
if it's ongoing and mandatory now, should be in, come out of non-routine?
I don't think so, because it will have an end date, and we'll, you know, once they say this is what needs to be fixed and we fix it, we won't be doing this as a spillway investigation. Like, it won't be a yearly thing. We do an annual inspection of our spillways, but that falls under just kind of our normal routine maintenance. It's a work order, so that actually lands up here in the routine O&M. So
anybody else have any questions?
And I guess the one I'll just bring up, just in case you guys look at this later, on this sheet, the routine O&M, you'll notice that the main dam is at 72% of the budget spent so far this year, and that is due to an unforeseen repair at the flip bucket. So our flip bucket drain was plugged, and we've been spending a lot of time up there replacing the pipe, getting it fixed. We had a bunch of erosion below the spillway riprap. So we're working with environmental to fix that and re-support our pipe in that location. So we do think that we're at the tail end of that. So I would think that those costs should kind of level off at that point, and we shouldn't see too many more costs as we go throughout the rest of the year. So otherwise, most of the other ones are tracking pretty normally. So.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
We're moving on to
had an HCP.
6B?
Yes, the HCP update, just a verbal update, just to inform you guys, in case there's any consultants that you're hoping to work with on this, I'll spell it out since not everyone might know the acronym. It's NIMS, National Marine Fisheries Service. They had sent us a letter several months ago requesting that we do a assessment for essentially volitional fish passage over the dam, through the dam, around the dam. So I've just finished up writing an RFP for that, and we'll be putting that out on the street here in the next couple of weeks. So if there is any design firms that you guys are aware of that you may want to have us have them propose on it, let me know. I can definitely add their names to the list so they get notified when the RFP goes out.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
All right, any other questions on item 6? Now we're moving on to item 7, capital budgets update.
That's me again. I will run down this relatively quickly, and if you have any questions, just let me know at the end. The fire flow tank replacement, that one's currently on hold. We do have shovel-ready plans for that, so once it's fully budgeted, we will be able to replace that tank. The membrane module replacements, no change on that one, same thing. The cost of those racks has gotten significantly more expensive, on the magnitude of about $300,000 a rack, and they used to be about $150,000 a rack. So even though our budget, I think the latest capital budget report might say that we do two membrane racks a year, we will likely do one per year over the next 2 years to hopefully capitalize on lower costs, hopefully, for like the first rack, and hopefully not too much inflation by the time we do the second one. The spillway assessment investigation, as I spoke to, we just did ground penetrating radar. We did do some concrete cores in the chutes and the walls. We're waiting to get back a report on those to let us know exactly how things are looking. From the just kind of the in the field analysis, everything was looking satisfactory, but obviously lab testing will let us know exactly whether or not we have problems or not. The geotechnical testing and seismic alternative study of the terminal reservoir, that is still under DSOD review currently. They did kind of give us a nod. There's some recommendations in that report to do some additional 3D structural analysis assessments of that dam. DSOD has kind of given us a nod that they would like us to do that. So we'll be moving forward with those assessments. I believe we do need additional budget to do that work. And so that will probably land in the 25-26 budget that you guys will see at the next meeting. Cathodic protection and repair project. Most of that project's complete. We are working with the state on another testing station where our line crosses the state water line. But otherwise, that project should wrap up in another 6 months or so and be fully complete. The DAF building repairs, we finally have a contractor to help us repair the building. We're just seeing a lot of rust and degradation issues of some of the steel beams inside the building, and it's becoming a safety issue. So that one is fully funded, and we are hoping to start that here in the next couple of weeks once we sign the contract. And then for completed projects, most of these have been on here for a little bit, but the latest one was the perimeter channel repair. We just finished that one up, and that was a FEMA reimbursable project. So that's kind of where we stand with our projects. Any questions?
Question. Who actually comes up with the budget?
So the way the project process starts is with me. I go out and I meet with our operators. I talk to them about what their needs and wants are, anything that they're seeing around the plant that's, you know, degrading, needs replaced, obsolete, that sort of thing. And then once we get their kind of wish list, then I end up I work on getting staff labor hours assigned to these projects that we think might be coming, so that I know how many staff members I'm going to, you know, apply to your system. And then I work with our finance group as well to. They see all the kind of overall O&M costs with chemical costs and that sort of thing, and see the trends on if things are getting more expensive or not. So it's quite a collaborative effort to develop your guys' budgets. But it starts with me, so yeah.
Okay. questions of David? All right, hearing none. Action items. In response to David's first report. And that's you again, David.
Yep. Let's see. So I did it. I can go down this if you guys would like. I don't know if anybody had a good chance to read this. He had made some, essentially, I guess on the broadest scale, like, and so we don't get too down into the weeds. He essentially said that if we reduce our downstream releases, that it would free up extra, quote unquote, extra water for, you know, municipal use. And in this rebuttal, I think it goes to state that there's a lot of factors that go into what our downstream release does and who it benefits and why we need to do it. So at the end of the day, I think it was, we acknowledged that he did do a pretty good analysis of what our system does, but he was lacking some, in the time that he had to review it, I think he's just lacking some, a lot of information around, you know, the groundwater recharge benefits, the environmental benefits, some of our, you know, water right issues, you know, in our requirements. So this just goes to kind of package it all up and say, well, these are all the reasons why you have these conclusions, and here's kind of our rebuttal to each conclusion. This was reviewed by the Zone 3 TAC. They did have some comments. I incorporated them. They were very minor. So I think at the end of the day, you know, this came in a response to, like, you know, with the Central Coast Blue Project happening and water rates going up and things like that. And so they were, I think he was really looking for an alternative or an additional supply of water that was quote unquote free. And as we all know, with the HCP efforts ongoing, and, you know, and just keeping our reservoir healthy and within its operational ability, within the safe yield, so we don't go dry over years, I think there's just a lot of factors that go into it. And so at the end of the day, I don't think there's, in his terms, extra water to be had. And if anything, as the HCP gets, you know, adopted or approved, we will likely see more demand on, you know, downstream release. So if anybody isn't aware, we did adopt the, you know, interim downstream release schedule several years ago. I believe that was in 2006. It's operated very well to keep the creek running, you know, running the way it should, you know, not stranding fish, providing, you know, the downstream users wells, you know, it's keeping them, you know, very well charged up. I shouldn't say very well. It's, you know, it's doing what it needs to do to make sure the municipal agencies get the water that they need. So, and I believe that's kind of all highlighted in this as we, all my conclusions in here kind of rebut certain points of his, you know, his points throughout. So, today was just for you guys to kind of receive and file it, unless you have any major comments or concerns with what's in it. So.
And just for the record, who is Mr. Swift?
He is a mechanical engineer. He lives, I'm trying to remember all the, I think I might have had it in here.
He lives in Grover.
Does he live in Grover?
Is,
yeah.
Basically, he's a concerned citizen.
He was a resident, yeah. Resident of Grover Beach, concerned citizen.
Yes.
But he was a mechanical engineer, thought he could do some good and help out, take a look at this. So, yeah.
I did read your report. I thought it was really well written and detailed, and there's just obviously so many factors that go into this analysis. So, I appreciate your report.
Thank you.
I had a question a little bit off point, but before the miracle rains and the lake was receding, and I think at one point, I've forgotten what the lowest point, 15% or something.
I think we got all the way down to 10, if I recall.
10, okay.
Yeah.
So if the drought had continued, at what point would that affect the downstream release?
I believe, that's a really good question. I'd have to go back and look at the Idris and our low reservoir response plan. I think we stopped releases somewhere around that, like, I think it was 5,000 acre feet, somewhere in there. We were getting somewhat close to where we were going to shut off the downstream releases.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just curious.
If I remember correctly, the low reservoir response plan, the downstream releases were slowly cut back. I think with, like, the last few years, they were already reduced. I don't have it.
Yeah, and it's a, and it was a trigger, right? It was, you know, 20,000 acre feet we enter into it, and then I believe it, you know, 15,000 acre feet we started to dial back downstream releases. Then once you hit 10, we really started to pull back on downstream releases. At the same time, we were also cutting municipal agencies' deliveries as well. But I believe that 5,000 acre feet was the kind of last Hail Mary, and was that's when we shut off downstream releases and tried to save that last remaining water for the agencies. So, yeah.
Yeah, so with just, you know, for our knowledge, you know, with the rain, upcoming rains, you know, days, lengths shorter, how quickly does the Zone 3 react? I mean, if you hear huge storms coming, do you start to reduce the downstream releases? How quickly do we jump on stuff like that?
So we don't reduce downstream releases, and I can explain why. And that is because our downstream release, even during the summer months, is I think we max out at somewhere around like 7.5 CFS is what we're kind of shooting for. You know, when the reservoir spilled, we saw 650 CFS going over the spillway. Our operational plan is not to cut downstream releases, and the one of the bigger reasons for that is that watershed at the base of the dam, there isn't one. And the minute we kill downstream release, that, you know, we see it when we do when DSOD comes out and they do their annual inspections and we have to shut their valves and cycle our valves, well, it gets shut off for a couple of hours, and you can literally start to see that area dry up relatively quickly. So the, you know, I know I get the phone call every year, it's raining, we're still releasing water, why are you doing that? And it's because I can stop downstream releases, and from the dam to like Rodriguez Bridge will dry up super quick, even with it pouring down rain outside. So it's never been our operations plan to stop downstream releases in rains. And we, even though the dam was not designed for flood control, it does provide that level of flood control. So yeah, operationally we don't dial back. But in the winter we're usually at our lowest. We're already at 3 MGD. Well, I know I'm switching my units here, but you know, we'll get down to that 3 CFS like minimum release, and then it'll just hold that way for most of the winter time. So, and three, you know, you hear the 3 million gallons per day and it sounds like a lot of water, but when you really look at how much water, say, you know, Orville was sending 300,000, you know, CFS down their spillway. And we're spending, you know, 3 out of our outlet, you know, so it's not a whole lot of water, but it's enough to sustain, you know, that watershed through there. So,
yeah, thank you. I know we've discussed this numerous times, so thank you for that. But yeah, I do know that that's a question that comes up often with the general public.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, and I can quantify, you know, a little further too for like downstream, you know, down in Oceano and things, you know, down at the 22nd Street Bridge, you have to think that, you know, the carrying capacity of the creek down there is like 3,000 CFS before it finally overtops. So us sending 3 CFS, you know, we're not contributing to flooding, you know. So, yeah, that little bit of water is not the problem.
Did you have something to
say? I just want to ask quick question. So did you find a new source to predict the rain, folks? I know that that's been a struggle, finding a source that can be somewhat accurate. So I noticed your estimates.
Yes.
And they seemed ambitious based on the reports I've read.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if you have a new source that's saying we're going to get more.
We don't. What was interesting is that right around the time that I was talking about that long-range weather site that shows rainfall prediction in inches, they were essentially copying it year to year, and we saw that the numbers weren't changing. And then right about that time that I brought it up, we my staff member, logged in there, and they had finally updated it. And so those numbers are finally updated again. She is actually preparing a one-page memo about how she does the projection report and where those numbers come from and why. And so I'll share that with the group as well. The TAC really wanted it. I wasn't aware how many people are actually using that projection chart, and I know it comes to your guys' city councils and stuff, so we're going to provide that one little memo so at least everyone knows how we're, you know, generating that.
All right. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Anybody have any have any other questions or comments on that David Swift report? I had one, just a question for you. Was, and I don't have any problem with him, you know, the David Swift, and even, I think he was actually had good intentions. Mm-hmm. It's good for to have people checking on what you guys do, and maybe he's much more educated on it than any of us. Did the Zone 3 have an obligation to respond, even reply?
I don't think you guys had an obligation to really reply to him, but it was a request from the advisory group to reply to him. You guys, I can't remember, that was two, maybe three meetings ago that he came and talked, and you guys requested that we have an official response and that the TAC had a chance to review it. So that's where that came from.
So there could be a time when another, subject comes up or we don't reply.
Correct. Correct. Okay. It was just at your guys' request.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. I don't see anything on the action items 9. How about 10, future agenda items? Do you have future agenda items for us, David?
I do not have anything. Anything you guys would like to see? It'll be more than just the normal stuff, plant operations and quarterly updates and things like that. So unless there's anything out of this kind of normal agenda, happy to provide updates.
I would be curious about the lake. It was so low for so long. What impact that's had on the everything to do with Lopez? The level's risen how many feet?
Right.
And then as far as Zone 3, we're kind of overseeing the whole lake, correct?
Yeah.
So it'd be good to get a report on how that affected everything.
Sure. Yeah, and I can't say for this group too that we did do the bathymetric study on the reservoir, and that spoke to how much sediment has built up in the lake over time, and it was actually very, very minimal. So I think it was maybe like 5% silted in from its original capacity. If I have sent the report out to the TAC members, if they do talk to you about it, you will see that it actually looks like our capacity went up a little bit, and it actually turns out, so the last bathymetric survey we did was in 2002, so it's been 20 years since we did one. The technology has gotten significantly better, and so it actually kind of showed that the sedimentation that had occurred in that 2002 report actually wasn't as accurate as we thought it would be. So if you're looking at the report going, well, if you're comparing the two, it looks like we actually gained capacity, we lost sediment. That's not the case. We actually went back and compared it all the way back to the original plans from the 60s, and it shows that it has sedimented up a bit, but it was very low. It just, that 2002 report didn't quite quantify it as good as it should based on the technology that was available. So I think it was a little more conservative than you.
That's great, though, isn't it? That's not a worry that we have to get out.
Correct. To Bart's point is that, if we do see these really low lows and then we get these huge storms like we saw that fills it completely up, yes, is that bringing more sediment in? Likely. So we'll see. And we plan to do these, they recommend these bathymetric surveys every kind of 10 to 20 years, so we'll probably try to stay on top of it a little more. But right now, I don't think sedimentation of the reservoir is too big of a concern. So.
One other deal was I have some buddies that go out to the lake, they fish, they do whatever. Is that bridge done? The one that's right there before the entrance?
Not yet. So they're doing the seismic retrofit on that one. The last time I was out there, it looked like they had put the caissons on both sides of the bridge. So right now it's a single support, in different spots down the center of the bridge. They're putting kind of like an H pile, so you have supports on both sides and then a beam that cuts across. And once they get those beams in, they'll take out those original center beams as well, or columns. So it is not complete yet, but I'd probably say they're probably 60% of the way through. So.
Right. All right, how about another committee member comments? Hearing none, how about you, David? Do you have any other comments?
I don't think so.
Okay. All right. Call for adjournment if everyone's okay with that. Have a good Thanksgiving, everyone.
Yeah, you guys as well.
Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
Thank you.